Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/filmwaxradio. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Hey everybody, this is Adam Shartoff, your host of Film Wax Radio. Welcome to episode number 371. Today is a very special show. I just want to say I'm not going to do a long intro today because I'm up at the Hamptons International Film Festival. I just arrived. I'm trying to get this show posted super quick this week, so it probably actually comes as a relief to you. All I will pitch to you, if you're listening, please do go to iTunes and subscribe. If you're not already a subscriber, and then give us a star rating and or a comment. There's places to do that. If you search iTunes on the store and FilmWax, under FilmWax, you can find on the FilmWax page a place to subscribe. And once you subscribe, you can leave a star rating, which would be very nice. And you know already from listening to podcasts how much that does help us who put on these shows and who don't ask for money and just ask for a little bit of support in that regard. And it helps, of course, people find the show. The higher your rating score, the more people that write in on that, the more likely your show will be found by new people who are interested in things like independent film, etc. So thank you for that. And I should say you can also subscribe to the show on Stitcher if you are not a purchaser of Apple equipment and you want, you can easily find, download the app Stitcher, which is a pretty cool app, I should say, and you can listen to, find the show on there as well. So today's show, there's two segments. The first segment is with a filmmaker named Sharon Shattuck, who has a documentary, personal documentary, which explores her relationship with her family and her dad, especially, who was way before we used the term transitioning. This man was self-identified as a woman and very bravely came out to his wife, I think just almost from the moment they started to date many years ago. And they decided still and all to get married and raise a family. They have two daughters, one of whom is Sharon, and who made this film. So it explores Sharon's dad, who I refer to as much as I can remember to as a she, because that is the correct pronoun. But I sometimes screw up in the conversation, as you'll see or hear. And just because it's still something that we're transitioning in a sense as well as a culture, getting used to how to speak about this and finding the language to do it. And it takes time. So it's normal to not be completely comfortable talking about these issues, and I think you'll see me stumbling a little bit here and there, but I was thrilled to have Sharon on, and she was delightful, and recorded on the top of a building in Park Slope one evening not long ago. My second conversation is back in the Showbiz studios where I do the show generally. It's a round table approach to the show, which I've been doing more lately, and we'll get to that in a little bit more detail, but it's with the Leiser brothers, Eric and Jeffrey, friends of mine. Years ago, when I used to have my own FilmWax film series, I would invite filmmakers to come show their films and meet the audiences and do a Q&A, and they were among those. They had a film called Glitch in the Grid, which if you can find, I recommend it. It's a lot of mixed media. It's an experimental, and there's experimental animation. It's a beautiful film. Eric has a new film called Apocalypsis, which will be, I think, screening at the Wexner Center for the Arts on November 1st. So it's coming up at 7 o'clock. Eric will be there. Let's see, set in a parallel universe, slipping toward destruction nears a black hole, his new feature, Apocalypsis, follows a woman who begins to have intense visions after reading the Book of Revelation. A Cal Arts grad, Eric Leiser, is included in the exhibition Dreamlands, Immersive Cinema and Art, 1905 to 2016, currently on view at the Whitney Museum in New York. So there's lots of reasons to get behind Eric and his brother, Jeffrey, both very talented, lovely people. Jeffrey has until recently been working in the restoration area of the Criterion Collection and helped me on that recent episode with Whit Stillman, helped me put that together at their offices. I needed a location that particular day, and he helped put that together. And he also opened that Criterion closet for me so I could raid that closet. So Eric and Jeffrey will be on the show. And sitting in with us three is another guest, Curtis John, who is a curator, film curator and programmer, and Brooklyn native. And so we are going to meet with Curtis during this conversation as well. He's going to talk about all of his good work. Oh, and the music in this episode is from singer-songwriter, musical artist Leslie Neuchau, from her brand new album, Balm for Gilead. Leslie will be performing in New York City, I think, for the first time in many years. This is a comeback, and she'll be performing songs off her new album, as well as her other material from her catalog, and she'll be at Joe's Pub. So I think there are still a small number of tickets left. If you're interested in seeing Leslie, and I'll be there, you can go to Joe's Pub and purchase tickets for her performance Saturday, October 8th at 7 o'clock, doors at 6:30 at Joe's Pub in the Village. Hope you can make it. But meanwhile, enjoy some beautiful moments from this new album, Balm for Gilead. So let's go right now into my first conversation with Sharon Shattuck regarding her film. Did I mention the title? Am I that incompetent? It's called, I think I may have, From This Day Forward. The big news is that the documentary will be having its broadcast premiere, since it's already had a theatrical. It's going to have its broadcast premiere on October 10th, coming right up, on POV, which, if you check your local PBS affiliate, you should be able to see that October 10th. And I highly recommend it. It's a great film. So let's get into my conversation right now with Sharon Shattuck regarding her new documentary, From This Day Forward.
Dad, do you recall when we talked in hypothetical terms about me getting married?
Yes.
John asked me to marry him just now.
Oh, we're so excited for both of you.
I believe it was in middle school when my dad told me, Sharon, whenever you get married, I hope that you'll let me wear a dress when I walk you down the aisle.
I'm sure that this is probably typical of anybody who's transgender. You have a definite sense that something's not quite right.
How come I wasn't born a girl?
One day, Trish said, well, I'm going to step out and then I'll come back. And Trish came back dressed as a woman.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do I sound okay?
You do.
Should I get right up there?
That's like great. This? Perfect.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
How's it going?
Good.
Where are we here? This is
wow. Well, we're on a rooftop in Brooklyn,
right?
In Park Slope, in your on your rooftop, and the skyline is behind me, and it's beautiful, and it's nighttime.
It is. There's a feeling of such calm up here.
Yeah,
isn't there? And only like 2 hours ago, there was this huge storm. I didn't know there was going to be a huge storm. Did you?
I didn't, and I missed it because I was working in a basement.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's awful.
Yeah.
No windows?
No. Yeah.
Ooh.
It's like a real bummer.
Yeah. That's like a bunker thing where you just, I've done that though. And it's hard.
It's tough. Yeah. Can you hear the airplane?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. Huh. It's fine. This ambient noise is all charming to those listening.
Good.
It's true. I mean, I think that those who don't live here, it's kind of cool, I think. When I'm listening to something, I don't try to give the idea that we're in some hermetically sealed environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
we're not in a spaceship or anything.
No, we're not. You know,
bummer.
So you made a documentary about your parents, right?
Yeah.
It's called From This Day Forward.
Yes.
Very good title. And I saw it because the distributor you were working with initially, for the theatrical, Jim Brown, who's an old friend of the podcast, not mine. No, he brought this to my attention and I watched it and I really, really liked the movie. And so I was like, yeah, let's do it. And so it took a little while, admittedly. Here we are sitting on a roof.
Yeah, no, I'm really happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
And yeah, I know it's just been a weird summer trying to kind of schedule stuff.
You seem very busy.
I don't know. Yeah, it's weird. I'm not that busy, but I'm just like I've been traveling a lot for the movie still.
Oh, sure. That makes sense. What about your folks?
They have been also traveling, and it's really interesting, like, watching them evolve over the course of the year into these people that are, like, happy to take the microphone and talk to people at events and stuff
like
that.
Well, your dad, she seems always to take to the microphone or to attention in a very positive way, which is one of the things I found kind of more fascinating about her is that she's going through this intensely personal, you know, thing in her life, and your dad became Trisha, right, when you were younger,
right.
A teenager?
Yeah, I mean, it was weird. It was like a very long process.
Right. Yes.
I mean, I first found out, I don't even think I was in third grade. I think I was younger.
Mm.
You know, so I don't know, how old are you when you're in third grade?
Eight.
Eight or so? So
I
was around
eight.
Like eight, seven, something like that. And my sister's 3 years younger than me, so she's five or so.
Right.
And, what happened was my sister was like kind of snooping around like little kids do and digging around and found some photos of my dad dressed up as a woman and then asked my mom, what is this? And my mom was like, well, you know, I guess we should just tell them rather than, like, my mom already knew.
Yeah.
That
would have been a horrible way to find out if she hadn't already.
Right. Yeah.
Like that your 5 year old.
Yeah. Seriously.
Tells you that.
Yeah. No kidding. Man, sounds like a bomber.
No, it's just.
Huh.
You're going to hear it's flyover time here. It's like, so put up with the folks. You might be annoyed by sounds of planes flying overhead and other sounds, but. Like the breeze or whatever you're hearing, but come on, it's pretty effing amazing at the same time. You are in Brooklyn with us right now on a rooftop in Park Slope,
and the weather is
and it's balmy and it's
amazing.
Well, it's not even balmy, it's really,
really
nice.
Perfect.
That storm really, really did help with the weather, so we can now say this is a film and weather podcast.
My friend used to call it homeostasis when you know the weather's like. The perfect temperature. Like, you don't need to put on a sweater. You don't need to, like...
Oh, we are there.
Sweat, you know.
But there's a strong, strong breeze. Mm. Here it comes.
Oh, yeah.
Some of this could get edited. We'll see. It might get edited. This could be edited. But I have a feeling it's intermittent. Yeah, so that's something. So it's this intensely private process. And at the same time, though, he really seems to take... He's natural on the camera, in front of the camera. He likes to perform. He's a musician. He's an artist, right? He, you know, seems a part of him that seems to really like that relationship with the public.
Yeah. I mean, I use a feminine pronoun.
Yeah.
But it's obviously complicated, and, like, I'm not ever the one who's like, how dare you use he or anything like that. Because it is a learning process for, I think...
We're coming along really quickly, I think.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, you know,
I think so too.
I'm impressed, you know. I mean, I'm not living in certain parts of the country, which maybe it could be different. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But here, and I don't mean even in the middle. It could be a few minutes north of here, for all I know. But I'm impressed with the way people are opening up, about this. You know, I know your dad is... Or the pronoun is she.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's still hard to say dad and she.
It is, but it's also when you liberate yourself from all the old assumptions and the old, you know, ways that we just... I mean, I think you're willing to say, okay, if somebody's, whoever they are, like your father self-identifies as a she.
Yes.
More than even a woman, in a sense, because, right, but has transitioned to a degree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not thoroughly.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of argument about, like, I
right,
think
what
in
that
the trans
means.
Community.
Oh, right. Maybe a transitioning doesn't
transition
it could be a psychological
doesn't have to
thing.
Mean
physical.
Surgery.
Right.
It doesn't have to mean bottom surgery specifically.
Okay.
So
another
transition is like, I am living my life as a woman.
As a woman. And I feel that
and
I am a woman.
And I am a woman,
right.
You know, in my head and, you know, internally.
Okay.
So that's transitioning.
Okay.
And so... I mean, I'm sure you'll hear a lot of comments about this. It's a really touchy subject, but But Trisha, my dad, has not done bottom surgery. You know, she has done the tracheal, like the Adam's apple, and that all happened when I was really young. And the electrolysis, which was like, just looked so painful. I mean, I can't imagine having a beard and then getting rid of a beard. It was like, it took my dad like so many visits to the like electrolysis place, and like her face was all swollen like Homer Simpson for weeks. You know, it was crazy. But that all happened when I was very young. So
yeah, well, it's just, and your dad Trisha, she is also your parents have stayed together, is my
yes.
point. Your mom and your
right.
dad. And they had two children while your dad was already, on some level, identifying in some ways. Well, not so much?
Yeah, what happened was, like, before they got married, my dad told my mom, hey, there's something about me that you need to know.
Before? That was really
before,
responsible.
Before, yeah. It was like their third date or something crazy. And then came, you know... Again, I guess, I don't know, this is like Trisha's MO, like came out in the women's clothing, you know, instead of like explaining it fully, was like, this is who I am.
This is what I was getting at, yeah.
Which is like, okay, like that's interesting. And I think back then, I think it was like 79 or 80 or something, 1980. So I don't know if Trisha really had the language even to be like, I am transgender.
Right, no, of course not.
So my mom was like, okay.
People
you know?
Like that were being arrested.
Right.
I mean, still.
Yeah.
Or certainly they were being cast out. They were being...
Yeah.
It's of course. I mean, a lot of people lived in shame for so long. You know, that's the real tragedy. And in a way, it shows how brave your dad was just to do that.
Right,
it's like maybe he thought in the back of his head when he just changed and he came out and to show your mother. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
She did. She, maybe she thought, although maybe at the time your father still suffered, as far as your father was concerned, the pronoun was still he.
Yes.
Even though, right. Now,
right.
Okay. But still, we'll say she. If she came out dressed completely in women's clothing, your mother would be totally convinced. This is not best way to show, you know, like if I say it's not going to do the justice, but if it come out, you'll be totally convinced and sold, but I still can love you. And I still want to have a life with you.
I don't know. I mean, I think my mom just thought at first that it was like a kinky private thing.
Hmm.
She, you know, just because I think that's the only kind of language that people really had back then, like outside of the LGBTQ community, you know, for those people who, men who dress in women's clothing, were seen as kinky or whatever.
Yeah.
Perverted.
Right. Of course. No.
So she just was like, okay, I think I can handle this as long as it's like in the privacy of our home.
Right.
And of course, I mean, obviously if you're transgender, sooner or later you are like, I can't handle this anymore. I need this to be my full-time persona and who I am, you know?
Right. Ugh. It's like, your dad is an older person now.
Yeah.
How old is your dad?
60. Ooh, oh, my God. 60 or 61?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Not so.
Trisha has, like, what's it called? Like, shock white hair, I'd say. Mm-hmm. So she kind of looks older.
No, it's true. No, my dad is 80. So, and I only saw him in a dress once for all the wrong reasons, but it was a, you know. not for this podcast, and I shouldn't make light because we are talking. It is it's you know, another positive response to your film, which is again called From This Day Forward.
Yes,
it's not heavy duty. This
right.
is I mean, I don't know if this was intentional.
Oh yeah,
but it's not. You're not being like polemical. First of all, it's not all personal. It doesn't have an outright, some sort of political agenda. I mean, one could argue there is one, somewhat. But if there is, it's being sort of conveyed in the most natural and organic way, you know, which is
exactly
family.
Right.
You know, it's like, and so if everybody who has an issue about this, and I don't think most of my audience would, but I don't know. I just think, you know, get out of your own way. Because it's like, it's so much easier just to love everybody. It's so much easier to just let people be whoever they want to be. Mm-hmm. Once you allow yourself to embrace that, life just gets easier. And you meet and you can connect with people in such more nuanced, positive ways.
Yeah.
So if you're listening and you have a problem, get over it. See this film, first of all. And you will have more opportunities, by the way, because this is great news. I mean, just a few weeks, it's going to premiere on the 750th season of POV. Now, what season is it? It's 30?
Oh, God.
It's 31? Something like that? I know. I keep going into their parties.
Is it 25?
No, it's 26. I think it's more than that.
Oh, shit.
All right. Well, who cares?
Sorry,
October, what's the broadcast date?
October 10th.
October. It's coming right up.
Yeah.
So we're going to put this up in the just days before that.
Cool.
So people go see it. Will watch it on their public television affiliate or whatever.
And it'll be on Netflix and stuff. Netflix, iTunes, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Sundance Now in January and February of
but
next
don't
year.
Have to wait.
But don't wait. Yeah,
go see the
go
is there TV. is there different lengths? Is the POV version no?
Same exact length. The only difference is the credits. So it doesn't really matter.
They're twice as fast.
No.
You can't put all your Kickstarter friends
on. That's actually
on POV.
Exactly.
I think of those things, but yeah, because it's not for those listening who, you know, are interested in this kind of stuff. It's not unusual, especially in the documentary sphere, to have a three or more versions. You can have like, you know, the theatrical length or version, you can have the broadcast, you can have an online
educational,
or a DVD or educational. Yeah. There's so many different versions that you could potentially be making.
We did a cut down for Swedish broadcasting.
Really?
Public broadcasting in Sweden, and I think Israel too, but it was like we lost so much of the personal kind of character, you know.
Really?
Because the whole film is just a character
cut down?
Portrait. We just had to like lose like the quirky, funny stuff, really.
You that's know? Too bad. And Sweden, isn't that like ground zero for sex change?
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
I think, they
physically?
Probably didn't, you know, they didn't, they were like already on board with the movie, so maybe
right.
we figured
exactly.
we didn't have to win them
no,
over.
No, that's exactly it.
Humor.
That's what, yeah, that's what it's getting at in a way. Not that they would, you know, it's almost like we already, dude, we were on board before you Americans were, you know, with this. We have no issue. Has the film played internationally?
It
beyond
has.
North
I mean,
America?
Just in well, it's played like on TV in some countries, and it'll be on Netflix worldwide, but not everywhere. I mean, like we were in New Zealand and some other, you know, random film fest. I actually went to Poland this spring, which was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been there before.
Mm-hmm. Me either.
But that was interesting. Yeah, we would have done better if we had a Polish subtitled version. We only had like a small like subset of the audience that understood English.
Oh.
And, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, whatever.
No Polish subtitles? Or?
No Polish subtitles. And they didn't quite, there was like a little, like I really think when you go to international festivals, you realize that American audiences are actually pretty on board with like LGBT terms and kind of the language of it. Like in the Polish festival, this one guy was asking me a question. He's like, I don't understand how your father is a woman if, you know... It was something really weird. It was like, how could she be married to your mother still? And I was like, what? What would you even, you know, they're still married. And they consider themselves two women now, but
yeah, but it's all very new, you know, still for we're, you know, as backwards in some ways as the U.S. is.
Mm-hmm.
In other ways, we're also very progressive and, you know, I mean,
yeah.
But my ride is here. No, that's a helicopter.
Yeah.
Check it out,
it's
folks.
Trump.
Yeah. It's... Your film is largely about your parents' relationship and navigating your dad's taking more steps along in his transitioning, right? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
But it culminates in your wedding.
Yes.
Is that a giveaway? Is it?
Shouldn't I? No.
It's in the literature.
I'm kind of embarrassed that I made, you know, a doc with my wedding in it.
Well, you know, it saves on having to make a second video,
right? It's true, yeah.
Like, actually, you have your broadcast length video of your wedding, and you have your you know, theatrical version of your wedding video.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a plot point, you know?
Yeah.
It's true. It's weird to think about it that way, but, like, when I got engaged, it was like halfway through filming the movie. And, and I just always remember how, like, I was in middle school and my dad was dropping me off at school and said, I would really, you know, whenever you get married, I want to wear a dress to your wedding, you know, when I walk you down the aisle. And back then I just was like, no fucking way. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I can swear on this, but,
no problem.
Just didn't want to, I don't know. I was like, I need to keep you over here and my friends over here and my, you know, just really separated back then and very kind of uptight about it. And,
see so, the film to yeah. see what, how it turns out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, see? Exactly. That's see? A secret.
Well, yeah. It sort of is. It's an important yeah. thing because it's like he has to, I'm sorry, your mom, your dad, she has to grapple with what her daughter wants or, you know, needs on this occasion, mm-hmm. What she is important to her, how to navigate yeah. this whole thing. It's kind of interesting because there are some aspects of your, it is confusing because it's not too typical to see a transitioning person into a woman mm. in a marriage, a heterosexual marriage.
Yeah, right.
And where, because in most cases, your mom might, or mm-hmm. the mother, or the wife rather, may decide, you know, this is too much. I need to have
yeah.
something other than this.
And they were at that point a couple times.
Sure.
When, yeah, for sure.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I guess it's like more common for people to stay together now, but it's still not very
is
common.
It?
Yeah, I think there's just a little more understanding.
Maybe. Maybe it's like with less of a stigma.
Mm-hmm, right.
Then, you know, maybe we can figure this out.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what it is. But I don't know. I mean, it's still, it's interesting. I mean, I tried, you know, I made this film because I was so fascinated by their dynamic, my parents' dynamic, and how they, I just feel like they kind of, they're always doing this dance with one another, and it's a dance that's like, I have to be who I am, but I also want to consider you, and how are you feeling today? How am I feeling today? What, you know, it's just always this, like, delicate kind of a relationship. And so I really wanted to tease that out, and mm-hmm. that's really like what the film is about for me. It was just about me trying to like wrap my mind around why they're still together and how they're still together.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
A lot of people have that with their parents.
Right.
Why are these two people together?
Are they still together? No.
Yeah, I think mean, so.
Yeah, so that's kind of where
in a way it's such an enormous issue that it, you know, maybe it sort of just, it steals the, you know, the thunder from all the minutia that normally destroys marriages.
Right.
You yeah. know? Oh, are you kidding me? Who has time for,
you know, yeah.
this or that? Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And so, again, let's see. So you had a theatrical in New York.
Yeah, yeah. We were in like, oh man, I wish I should have talked to Jim to get the exact cities and everything, but I know we were in San Francisco, New York, Portland, mm-hmm. Oregon, Boston. So, I'm not sure where else. Yeah. It was, you know, six or so. It's a small release.
And it does
but,
make yeah. sort of lend itself to educational or institutional distribution too, of course.
Yeah. I mean, I hope so. It is a little weird though, because it's like, it's such a character driven piece. It's not, you know, it's not like an issue documentary, and you know, I'm not like preaching or like trying to make policy change happen or anything. It's really just about like understanding this person. And, and hopefully by that, obviously I hope that you can understand what it's like to be transgender in a different way. But
what about in the States at the screenings, that your parents have attended? Has there been any, obviously people are going to want to talk to your dad a lot and your mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering if there was any like cases where people were kind of sharing you know, their own
It's like, it's kind of like a,
it really is,
it's interesting. You meet, like, I will see people and they really like mob my parents and they have tons of questions for them specifically, but like, I mean, I've seen there are trans people that who've come to the screenings. There's a friend who actually works for the Family Equality Council, and she said that when she saw the film, she thought if her wife at the time, like back when they were together, had saw the film, they might still be together. today. They were divorced now.
So that's exactly kind of getting back to what we were discussing before with the stigma, the pressure.
Yeah.
It's like everybody around you is probably only saying, how can you stay? You know?
Yeah.
And they're like, how can I stay? You know? And then, I love this person. They move me, you know, I want to be there with them. You know, it's like, you can't just erase that.
Yeah.
You're connected for so many years, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's been,
those vows.
Yeah. Yes. They're sacred. No. I mean, it's been really cool to see the way they've responded to the movie, because at first my parents were they thought I was just like making some, you know, home video. Like, I would come home for holidays with my camera and I didn't have any funding and they would just like humor me. Mm-hmm. And then after a couple years, I got some, you know, big grants from Abbey Disney and then from Sundance Institute and some other places. And, that's when they were like, whoa, Sundance, what, you know? And then now that it's on POV, they're just like, oh my God, like that's the only TV show they watch.
Really?
Literally.
So, must be so proud. So
they're really excited that it's on POV.
That's nice. That's really nice.
It's
to hear.
Cool. But they've like realized, you know, and in like, as the film kind of changed and grew and stuff, they've kind of, come into their own and they're like much better public speakers than they were when we first started out, and just like more comfortable talking in front of an audience.
Let's reshoot because you'll be more articulate.
Yeah.
Your dad must watch Austin City Limits or something. I don't know. He's a musician.
Yeah.
He's
right.
She likes to play a banjo.
Pick the banjo.
The banjo. Yeah. Very talented. Okay, here's a question for you now. You've been married how long?
3 years.
Oh, 3 years. Okay.
Yeah, and
your husband's name?
John.
John. Mm. Okay, so what if John were to divulge to you?
Yes.
That, you know, John would like to start wearing women's clothing or has feelings that he hasn't really dealt with.
I really, like, I don't know. I've asked this. I actually, you know, told John a lot. I was like, let me know if there's anything you want to tell me
You had this conversation when?
Like when we were dating. Oh. Just because I don't know. I just felt like it's good to talk about that as soon as possible, just to know like who the other person is, you know, through and through. And, but yeah, I don't know. I always say like, I don't know what I would do at this moment. I just can't wrap my head around staying with a woman, because I'm just not attracted to women. I mean, I love women, but as friends, you know, and I can't imagine that. But then my mom wouldn't have imagined either,
right?
With Trisha,
right?
Absolutely not. I mean, she was a child of the 50s. You know, she thought it was going to be like a Walt Disney kind of a situation. You know, marriage and kids and happy family.
Right. And Dad is a very good looking guy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. Know. I never thought, it's weird. It's weird looking at old pictures of your parents.
Charismatic.
When they're like younger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, I don't know. I mean, what would anybody do?
Yeah. You don't always know until you're thrust into the situation, I guess, but I'd ask.
Yeah. No, it's a valid question.
Yeah. Did you feel like you changed as a result of making the film? Do you have a different, you know, sort of opinion about anything that, or did your opinion shift at all?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting. Like, you know, I made this film and I have this sort of journey in the film where I go back and I tell the story of kind of how I came to like be accepting of Trisha, but it was also more than that. Like, it's really, making the movie and like looking at all this old archival footage and while at the same time interviewing my dad and talking about how did you feel then, realizing that my dad had called suicide hotlines and was considering jumping off the roof head first. And, you know, I didn't realize any of that when I was a kid. And
it's terrifying.
You know, I was too young. Like, I wouldn't have understood anyway,
right.
But, or it would have just completely freaked me out and like fucked me up. So I didn't know. And so going back and looking at that now and watching, you know, looking in my dad's eyes in those old videos, and just my heart was just breaking for Trisha, you know? And so that was really, really hard. And I feel like it kind of opened me up in a new way. you know, like I completely accept now and I understand like why my parents made the choices that they made. Even though when I was a kid, I was just like, ugh, I just want to be, I don't know. I just wanted to, I wanted my mom to divorce, frankly. I wanted to just have, didn't want to deal with a transgender parent, especially in Michigan, you know. It's not exactly New York City.
Very true. What town?
Well, it's, I don't say the name of the town.
No need. Within proximity of a Detroit or an Ann Arbor?
Proximity of a Traverse City.
Oh, Traverse City.
Up north.
No, it is north, yes.
It's up north, and it's a smaller area, and there are some crazies.
Yeah.
Not a lot. And I love most of the people up there, and there are a lot of, like, really open-minded people, but there are
There is
crazies.
Also those kinds of people that you know that love, that, oh, no, we're friends, but their politics are so fucking bizarre, but, you know, it's like those people, they hate black people, but they have friends that are black, but no, he's not black, he's just my friend, you know, you know what I mean, it's that kind of, I wasn't giving that person a southern accent, it was a sort of mixture of southern Appalachian / I don't know, Ozarkian, I apologize to my listeners, but no, I kid, but, you know, no, this exists in cities too, but yes,
yeah,
right, you know, I have a good friend actually in Bay City,
I've
been there.
Yeah, it's that's like a couple hours south.
Right.
It's like...
No, Traverse City is north, yeah.
I mean, the thing about
Flint
City... Yeah, Flint and that area... I mean, that area is like a little south, and you'll notice if you drive from there to where I'm from, the landscape completely changes. Because that area... This is my nerd coming out. It used to be a lake bed, so it's completely flat. And then you get up to where we are, and it's like, you know, hills. I wouldn't say mountains, but, you know, like we snowboard in the winter and stuff, so...
Wow.
Great place to visit.
Yeah. I love Michigan. Yeah. I've been there a few times. Well, thank you. Then again, the name of the film is From This Day Forward. It's directed by Sharon Shattuck. Not only is it premiering on TV on POV in October on the 10th, did you say?
Yeah.
On the 10th. But, so it's 10/10/16, but it's the premiere of the season, so that's an important...
The season premiered.
Oh, it already premiered?
Season premiered back in like June.
It's the closing film of the season.
I don't know if that's true either.
No. Peter says no. Okay. Well, anyway, it's on POV. What, you know, it's made your family, the Shattuck family, very proud.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, is Shattuck your parents?
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. Shattuck, it's made them very proud. I mean, that's great.
I love PBS. So do I.
Again, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for talking to me on the roof. It's really nice up here.
This might become a this should become a thing. I have a studio, you know, it's in the East Village, as you know, but it wasn't available. It turned out this last 2 weeks they were my producer was like, can't do it in the studio with his schedules. So
this worked out pretty well.
Worked out fine.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Well, we'll see you soon.
Thank you, Adam.
Thank you. For you, the listeners of FilmWax Radio, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Now, I take a lot of car rides myself, long car rides on the weekends or to work, and I have become very, very addicted to Audible myself. Two titles, for instance, that I recently downloaded was Roger Corman, a prior guest of the show. It's called Roger Corman, Blood-Sucking Vampires, Flesh-Eating Cockroaches, and Driller Killers by Beverly Gray. And also a former guest, William Friedkin. He has his memoir called The Friedkin Connection, two great titles. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/filmwaxradio. Again, that's audibletrial.com/filmwaxradio for your free audiobook. Again, now, Jeffrey and Eric Leiser, they're lovely Californian filmmakers. They were originally from California. They've been living here in New York for some time. And they're going to be discussing filmmaking in this conversation, along with my friend Curtis John, who is, again, a Brooklyn programmer. He's got his hands in a number of exciting different film series and events that are going on around Brooklyn. And he'll tell you how to follow him. And I think you really will enjoy this conversation. Okay, so here it is. Jeffrey and Eric Leiser and Curtis John in the Showbriz studio just a few weeks ago.
See the writing on the wall. Don't be afraid to fall. It's getting up that matters. We're all afraid to see. It's our humanity. We don't have to be so battered. There's beauty in everything. If we'd only let it in, there are angels everywhere. I don't want to die before I die. I don't want to cry before I cry. I don't want to go before I go. And I don't want to know before I know. And we all have our stories, full of failures and of glories. In the end it's all the same. Oh, step into a light. I promise that it's right.
We're at the Showbriz Studios here in Lower Manhattan, the East Village. Today I'm joined by the Leiser brothers, Eric and Jeff. Eric, how are you?
Great. How are you?
Good. I'm going to have to occasionally identify you as we're speaking, just so, because you guys you guys are twins, right? No.
Yeah.
Not, right?
We're 3 years apart.
You are 3 years apart? Is that true?
Yeah.
That's Jeffrey Leiser. Jeffrey? You go by Jeffrey, not Jeff, right?
Either. Jeffrey's fine.
Okay. Whatever you're more comfortable with. And Curtis Johns is here as well.
Yeah. John, no S.
John. Yeah. I don't know. I added that. Maybe
everyone does it. As long as you don't reverse my name to John Curtis, we're...
Oh, that happens too. You have two first names.
Oh, God. Yes.
Yeah. Is that the reaction? It's a religious thing?
It can be.
Okay. Curtis John is with us, joining us as well, who is a local Brooklyn curator. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely.
And we're going to get into all of this is great. What I'm trying to do here is to kind of create a little bit of a, I don't know, not salon. That sounds a little bit pretentious, but I'm trying to create a pretentious salon. And and so normally what I would do is have you guys on one at a time or, you know, set two different. But I kind of like the idea of people meeting and sharing experiences. So we'll see how it goes. You know, it's been working out great so far. Eric and Jeffrey, where did you guys grow up, by the way?
In Santa Rosa in Petaluma, California. It's about an hour and a half north of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Sonoma County.
Mm-hmm.
Like wine is grown and whatnot.
Yeah. Do you guys drink wine at all? Is that a part of your... Do you like that?
Sometimes.
Occasionally. Usually when I'm traveling.
When you're traveling? As in driving? No.
No. In New York, you have the subway, of course. But right. No, usually it's not in my shopping list to get into those wines.
Right.
So...
But is your families all still there? Your folks, et cetera?
My grandparents are up there.
Okay.
And we visit there about once a year.
Okay.
Yeah, that's me.
It sounds like it's real pretty. Sounds like it's really lovely country.
It's lovely. It's very formative for me. The redwoods are there, and that's kind of like the wellspring of my imagination in a lot of ways.
Oh wow! Did you, as kids, spend a lot of time going out to the redwoods?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
They weren't far away. And there's like geothermal hot springs and all kinds of great things.
Gosh, it sounds good. Why would you? Good. Why would you leave? Is my first question. Yeah. But you know,
my dad took some job in San Diego, and it was like I went to like a depressive goth phase after that.
Gotcha. So called surviving, survival mechanism of sorts, goth.
Yeah, it wasn't San Diego by the sea. It was like in the desert inner. Mm-hmm. Part, yeah.
I see.
And then Eric went off to CalArts for school, and I stayed in San Diego. And I worked at a local video store, and that's where I got into Bergman and mm-hmm. Bellini and a lot of the filmmakers that were inspiring. At CalArts, Eric got into experimental animation and cinema in general. And so from him, I got the alternative cinema and the world cinema, things that weren't readily available at Hollywood Video.
Mm-hmm. 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 And where was the video store?
In San Diego.
In San Diego.
Right by the freeway.
Okay.
Right. So people would turn off, get their new release, and leave.
Well, I want to interject. There was a video store called Kensington Video. It still exists.
Called what?
Kensington Video.
Kensington Video.
And they had a, it was like a mom and pop place. They still exist. And they had all types of out of date, old, foreign films. That really, before CalArts or anything like that, was mm-hmm. what got me. Because I discovered Schwankmeyer, The Quays, Starvich,
okay.
A lot of animated films from all over the world. That I was like, what? The deprogramming began pretty early.
That's a good way of putting it. Well, it's interesting. I just was remembering, and Chris, I'll try to come up with a good answer for when I ask you where you were raised and founded. But I remember, it was Jeffrey, right? It was you that I ran into on the street, right? That first time, right?
That's correct. That was skateboarding, and I was holding a huge poster of Glitch in the Grid.
Yeah, which is your last feature. Was that your first feature film together, by the way?
Third,
okay. Yeah. And what happened was, I was doing this film series in Brooklyn, my own, a few years back, mm-hmm. in the early part of the decade. And I was just kind of browsing through trailers. I don't even know what I was thinking of, but I was trying to find interesting indie films, you know, so I was looking at trailers. And I just happened to come across this trailer called Glitch in the Grid, and I watched it, and I thought, oh, this is pretty cool looking. It had animation in it, and it had, you know, it was clearly there was an experimental nature to the film, and it seemed like definitely, well, I don't know, really like a homemade product, you know. And so I was like kind of intrigued, but then, you know, it was just something. And then I think it was the next day. I'm pretty sure. It's in one's imagination, you always think it's like the next day, and it turns out it's months later, but in your imagination. So I'm walking down 6th Avenue, right by the IFC Center, on my way to the film. I remember going, I was heading to the Film Forum to pick something up, and here comes a guy on a skateboard with this enormous poster boards, you know, poster of Glitch in the Grid. And I'm thinking, this is very strange because I just watched the trailer yesterday. And so I stopped. We stopped at the corner and I turned to you and I'm like, I just looked at that trailer. And you go, yeah, I made the film. And so I said, well, would you be interested in screening it in my series since this is just so odd an experience? The universe is clearly telling us something. And then 5 years later, here we are still talking. So that's
still
nice.
At it.
Yeah. So we had a very nice screening and cruise, and we had a nice. I remember a nice turnout, right?
Yeah, we had
a
good turnout.
It was a very small venue, but
it was really cold. It was about 20 degrees that night, but we had a really good turnout for mm-hmm. the space.
And that's great.
Yeah, people would come. I was really working hard at promoting at least in the neighborhood. So,
especially for something different, I imagine. Right.
Yeah. Right. Well, it was something, and Curtis, since you're chiming in, I mean. I know that I had to develop something pretty quickly, call it a brand, call it a kind of an idea, a theme to what I was doing, what I was trying to do. And I don't even know that it was a conscious process, but I did do that. And Film Wax, whatever that means, was the series. And it just sort of people connected to what I was doing. So I think people did show up for whatever I showed, which is remarkable because I didn't have like some great track record. Like, it wasn't like scooped up from Sundance and plopped in Park Slope and now people were going to come to whatever I was showing. So I don't know if that's something that you're trying to achieve because you're doing a film series in Bed-Stuy, right?
Yeah. That's definitely what I'm trying to achieve. It's funny, you know, one thing I learned, and primarily we're doing a micro cinema that we're opening up in Bed-Stuy that we're looking to open. We had a pop-up space last year, this same time, last summer. And people are clamoring. People want entertainment, different types of entertainment.
Yeah.
And it's the hardest part is convincing them to, you know, stay away from their computers and do it, you know, which is a lot harder now than it was a few years ago, right? But and to stay off of Netflix and doing all those, not stay off, but to step away from those things, because I'm on there all the time.
Yeah,
but people are hungry, and they want to see something different, and people understand, although you have to teach them too, that seeing in front of an audience is key. It's essential. It's like really understanding or grasping exactly what these films are supposed to be about, or how to connect to them in a really original way. So yeah,
but don't you find though that in a way it's just I found what I was trying to do was also another part of my thing that I was trying to achieve, was that like with these guys, it was about, you can watch the film on Netflix, you can watch it, but it was about getting together and kind of having an experience of conversation.
Yes.
And the film was a vehicle for that in a way. So yes, it's a piece of that you're experiencing artistically, emotionally, hopefully, but that also it was really about creating something communal, like the conversation about things that matter to everybody. So that was the real reason of doing the series, I think, in the end. And so, because you know, like you said, you could see the movies pretty much anywhere. You could see it on the way to the event.
There's no Q&A after. It's like everyone Skypes and they're all like meet together. We just watched this film, you know. The film's over. It isn't, the credits don't even roll all the way. It's just like next film's playing, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you want time to engage other people to see, well, what did you think about it, and to reflect. Sometimes it'll be decisive in how you feel about the work and how it's going to affect you. I mean, I like films that get inside of you and just kind of replay, and I always I quote a lot. It's the films that I just forget the moment they're over that I'm kind of like, was that worth my time, or what did that really do? So, yeah, Community, all for it. Excited to hear about that.
Thank you.
Yeah. One other thing you mentioned, Jeffrey, on the way in was that Criterion is going to have its own channel. Is that on cable?
Yeah, through the Turner Network. I've been at Criterion for
a long time.
Close to 6 years now in restoration. But the company has changed where we've hired a lot of new people for this endeavor. We're going to create original programming. We already have.
It's not just going to be bonus features.
No, not just bonus features.
I would, by the way, tune in for that, as well as you know, audio commentary, because I always hear that sometimes audio commentary versions of films are on YouTube or something, but I can never find them, or think maybe I'm wrong. I think what a great thing, and there are definitely two schools about that whole thing anyway. Like, some people really embrace audio commentary, and then others really disdain it. But I kind of brought up the channel, or the new channel, because first of all, it's official, so it's okay to talk about it.
It's official.
Yeah. because also I did want to come back to kind of talking about that, you know, since we were talking about watching things at home.
And also Criterion, outside of just getting our archive and our supplemental features online, we're doing a lot more live events. Janus is really the theatrical wing of going into, you know, screenings at Film Forum, screenings at a few different, a lot of single theater cinemas.
Yeah, getting a lot of invitations.
That's for
these things, like, you know, new Decalogue. Maybe that was just a package. I'm sorry. Maybe that was just new DVD or Blu-ray. But there was a lot of stuff in the last year or two, invitations for press screenings for new prints and all that.
Yeah, and at the same time, it's Criterion in the 21st century, but it's the same Criterion as always. Actually, when we tried to go dual format, everyone said, no, we want DVDs to continue. Not only as a legacy, but actually people would want to increase their DVD collection, so we went back to separate it. So what I'm saying is...
Oh, they were in the same package as one.
Exactly, but not, right. what it says is physical media is alive and well. People want the artwork, they want the booklet.
Yeah.
And actually we're also launching the UK DVD and Blu-ray.
It's interesting It's interesting how we do another point of conversation. Maybe I shouldn't introduce more, but it's the every time a new format does come out, which isn't as frequently. I mean, some of them die off pretty quick. Do people remember the mini disc? Do people remember the even just the poor cassette tape? You know, all these things. Some do fall away. Some, you know, they because they're, you know, a more superior version format comes out, but you know. When it comes to things like vinyl and things like these things don't ever really quite go away. But mm-hmm. there's, you know, this the idea that they're going away because they're inferior is just so powerful. It seems like, you know, so many people got rid of vinyl, and again now film is, you know, for in terms of cinema. Getting rid of film is a big thing, but you know, I've been in touch with Kodak about they've got this whole still they're holding on there, you know, because there is a return to wanting to shoot and project still, but it's hard when the powers that be are shoving, you know, everything that, you know, in the into the heap, you know. So I don't know, but there can be multiple versions of different formats or multiple ways to see things, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the choice is great, you know. I have to edit some of that. Jeez, that was rambling. Curtis, though, talk about your series. Talk about it's in Bed-Stuy. You're permanent. Do you have now found a permanent space?
No,
or you're raising money for it?
We're raising money. We're still okay. Fundraising.
Is that old-fashioned fundraising, analog fundraising, or is that...
For now, mm-hmm. we're doing that just because we really need to connect with the funders out there.
Yes.
As opposed to just the online ones. You know, we know we have, you know, some basis for the online people, and, you know, that's how we interact with most people. But we want to make sure we're out there in the streets because, you know, just how we're talking about mm-hmm. being in community, we want to make sure that we have that foothold there mm-hmm. so that people are understanding what we're trying to do and, you know, seeing us physically understand what we're trying to do. So we haven't gone the Kickstarter route yet. We probably will next year, mm-hmm. you know, or some type of crowdfunding campaign, you know, if not, you know, the big boy. But yeah, but for now we're just doing the old fashioned type,
mm-hmm.
you know, not house party type yet. But
where would
but
comes in and kicks in some money for
yeah. I mean, but hey, that's it works. You know, whatever sure. works, whatever works, you do it. You know. But yeah, we're still in like that for now.
Bed-Stuy has fabulous block parties.
Absolutely.
It's the best I've been to.
Really?
I went to one last mm-hmm. week because I've become friends with this photographer who's been shooting block parties.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Anderson. And we did a little thing for Brick mm-hmm. about him, his work. And I went to a block party with him, part of our, you know, shoot that day as we went to this one and it was amazing. I mean, the food was unbelievably and they had, like, you know, this was one of the bigger ones, so they had, like, you know, the rides, they had the
yeah
stuff like that, and then Michael Jackson appeared, so, you know.
Oh,
wonderful.
Yeah,
I know that guy.
Yeah,
well, we all know that guy in Brooklyn.
Yeah, yes
okay,
right. Yes, he's yeah, I had a feeling. So it was a big deal. That's something to think about too.
Yeah that, and that's the thing, we've also been working on putting together like some alternative type of fundraising, so like it's an alternative idea into fundraising, so just not, you know, just not like, that's why we haven't gone the Kickstarter route yet,
mm-hmm.
because we want to try to figure out some things. I mean, like I said, on the ground that'll be a little different,
mm-hmm.
you know, some private, some public. We've done some private ones already, which have been well. We've done ones with we did one last month with another organization that went really well. And it, you know, it was also a movie night,
mm-hmm.
so it helped people know to see what our aesthetic is and mm-hmm. what types of films we would put out there.
What did you show?
It was all short films. It wasn't mm-hmm. any, there weren't any features, but mm-hmm. you know, we did it with this company, Bonfire Radio. They also an independent media company,
mm-hmm.
and so we kind of themed them around music. You know, not officially, but mm-hmm. still. So, but they were experimental. They were narrative. We had a couple of, like, web series and docs in there. It was like 10 films total.
Mm-hmm.
The most fun one was this one called Kung Fu Bum from a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
This music artist called K Gaines, and he basically, you know, it follows the whole narrative, you know, with the I'm gonna avenge my teacher type thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a homeless guy who's doing kung fu, and it's choreographed beautifully, and the audience were just howling, and it's just, that's the reaction you want to get,
sure,
when you show films, you know, and yeah. you know, so we had stuff that was very introspective. stuff that was weird and other stuff that was absolutely fun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the kind of crowds that we want to create. You know, that's the kind of feeling that we want to create. We want to have people, like you're saying, think about these things like when you leave. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, whether it's in a humorous way or introspective one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked it. People connected at these small events.
Absolutely.
Intimate events, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you know, that was what was the big, I mean, I'm still friendly with you guys. I don't see you as often. You never write.
Well, I have to say, so when we had the pop-up theater last year, mm-hmm. We showed this film. It was another music-based one, actually. Mm-hmm. It was on the 90s R&B singer, mm-hmm. Adina Howard. Mm-hmm. It was a documentary. It was roughly only 60 minutes. Mm-hmm. Filmmakers from Ohio. He was so excited we were showing it. And he was having a lot of play with it at the time, mind you. So it was good that he drove out from Ohio.
Really?
Yeah. He drove out from Ohio to come to our screening. And mind you, our space only fit 35 people max, mm-hmm. you know? But he drove out, and we had an hour and a half Q&A with him.
This was longer than
that. It was really cool.
Yeah.
And he's so appreciated. He always mentions us in a lot of his social media when he's plugging the film. Sure. He's like, we screened there, blah, blah, blah. Best screening we ever had, you know?
Yeah, I remember walking out of some screenings, and possibly it's hard to remember which ones now. But I remember the experience of walking out of some of the screenings that I've had, like feeling just like on cloud nine, just feeling like that really went well, you know, when everything connects. So, you know, and I know that I'm not the only one.
Absolutely. You know.
What's the name of the film series, Curtis?
The series or the theater?
Eat both.
Okay. Well, I mean, I do different things, but mm-hmm. I'll just start with the theater. The theater is called the Luminal Theater.
Luminal.
Yeah, Luminal. Mm-hmm. Luminal. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people, it kind of falls off.
And it's still pop-up, though, because you don't have a...
Oh, no, we don't have a pop-up space right now, so we've just been doing, like, little types of events.
Like in borrowed spaces, that kind of thing?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, like the half fundraiser movie night one, and then we've been doing this filmmaker discussion series mm-hmm. called Beyond the Cut, mm-hmm. Really just featuring Bed-Stuy filmmakers. And just going into a little bit of their history and how they go about making film and, you know, their inspirations and, you know, what they plan to do in the future. But it's really, that's, you know, getting back to community, that's one of the things that we do to make sure that the people living in the area know who the artists are that live in their area. Mm-hmm. That's very important to us. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, those people, I mean, while we'll be showing films internationally, those films that are going to be the lifeblood. Mm-hmm. Those filmmakers and those films are going to be the lifeblood of the theater. Mm-hmm. Because Bed-Stuy has always been an artist enclave. Mm-hmm. And in the past decade, it's become a real filmmaker enclave. As black filmmaker, that's, you know, whatever filmmaker enclave. But, you know, but as Bed-Stuy being, you know, a historically black neighborhood, it's been especially like a big enclave for black artists mm-hmm. and black filmmakers in particular. So whether they're from NYU or from UCLA or wherever, you know, a lot of people just end up moving right there. So we want to support that.
It's terrific, you know, and it's amazing how it's just kind of captured the imaginations of so many young filmmakers, obviously, who are planting themselves there.
Well, it's also very, you know, it can be very scenic, you know, with all those brownstones.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
right.
You know, between the brownstones and some of the new stuff and all the, you know, the nice looking parks. I mean, there's...
And you don't have to rely on that L.
Oh, no.
You don't have to worry about the fucking L, the fucking L train.
Oh, God. I can't imagine how which will people deal with that.
You guys mentioned Liza Brothers. You mentioned you're also in the fundraising mode for the new feature. Is that accurate, or am I... You look both a little bit ambivalent about that. Am I phrasing it that way?
Yeah, I mean...
Or is it just... Are you...
We have a plan for how we're going to release the feature.
Oh, can you talk about it a little?
Well, we're going to have the Wexner Center premiere. And
where's the Wexner Center, you said?
It's in Columbus, Ohio.
Maybe that friend, or the rather, the filmmaker.
David Filippi is the famous curator who runs the film department there. He writes for Film Comment and a bunch of other things.
Oh, right.
He's kind of a master film guru, mm-hmm. Particular animation. It's a specialty. So, and then, well, I'm showing kind of it's a short film in and of itself, but it's definitely related to the feature at the Whitney, the show called Dreamlands that I'm part of, which is huge for me as like an artist and filmmaker. I mean, to be in the Whitney, it's going to be up for 3 months, October 26th to February 5th. And then we're going to do...
Congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah.
Right now, I might do Cinema Village again for a week, but right now it's definitely going to be Anthology Film Archives for New York for a couple days. Mm-hmm. And then in Los Angeles for a couple days, unless I do a week there. So it's still kind of watery.
Mm-hmm. Who are you in touch with the anthology, by the way? Is it Jed?
Or
is
it's Chris. Okay. I know Jed, and I know Bradley. Uh-huh. But
I don't even know all these people.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's still a couple of...
They're all great.
Yeah. What's the name of the film?
Apocalypsis.
Apocalypsis. Rolls off the tongue.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds like a musical comedy. Am I wrong?
It's a musical comedy about the end of the apocalypse. Yeah.
It's a sort of apocalyptic thriller slash...
Go on. Genre-defying cinema, right?
It's a sci-fi apocalyptic tale with
animation,
hopeful message.
Okay.
And that's November 1st at Wexner. I'm not sure if you mentioned the date.
November 1st at Wexner.
If you were in the Columbus, Ohio, and I have friends in Columbus, Ohio, so Nikki Simcox, you know her? Sure. It's okay.
Sounds familiar.
Nicole Simcox. Nicole, if you're listening, tell all your friends. We'll contact her.
We do have distribution already.
Well, that's what kind of brought everything to another level. Is we signed our past distributor, kind of phased into Alchemy Pictures. I don't know if you've heard of them.
Yes.
Yeah, pretty big. And so I was like, oh, we're going to lose our distributor, and you know, that's a huge setback. But then Fair Thor, who is running Vanguard Cinema, put out our last three features and our short film collection, and really like made our what career we have possible. He hooked me up with IndyCan Pictures. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I've heard of them. And I was like, oh, they're like a little bit better in some respects than even Vanguard. So I signed this huge contract with them, and it's going to come out March 1st, you know, everywhere. They're pretty much connected to every outlet. So I'm excited to have that to continue.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, I would have kept going, of course. But then it's kind of like it runs the festivals and whatever special screenings, and then, you know. Mm-hmm. But now it's really going to have a real release. So that's exciting because not financially, but just because it'll get out there again because we do some fans.
Vermont College of Fine Arts MFA in Film offers a 2-year student design project-driven graduate program of professional mentorships for your scripts, fiction and nonfiction filmmaking, and transmedia projects. Each semester begins with an on-campus residency week of screenings, workshop lectures, and crits, along with the preparation of an independent study plan of your own personal projects. Then, students and faculty return home to work independently and meet monthly via Skype as projects unfold. The MFA program is designed to fit into the life you have and the films you make. Exciting, affordable, and intense. Refine your creative vision as you develop intensely personal stories in an independent practice. Visit vcfa.edu/film for more details.
So I'm really like stressed and exhausted right now because I have to lock the visual in 2 weeks and then hand off to Jeff, and he only has a month. He's already done a lot of the mastering for our last cut, but he has to do a lot of stuff. So
just place music again.
I'm in like the fire right now. If I seem a little tired, so, I'm just...
Well,
like,
I appreciate it all the more that you made it.
But it's good. It's really... this cut is strongest ever. Mm-hmm. And I took a lot of feedback. I screened it around, and it's really good to hear people say, but then after a while, you have to just say like, screw you. This is my vision. I'll take what works. But unless it's going to be really what's it's the closest thing that's in my head, then it's not worth all this hell, basically.
Right.
So it's a balance between, like,
yeah,
listening to other people and then, like, can I live with this?
Well, we always go through a phase where we're not overly confident and we have a ton of people watch it and we take in everything everyone has to say and give everyone the benefit of that. And then you have to step back for a few months and look at it and say, what do I really want to tell in this story? And it was all shot in New York, which was difficult in the sound arena, because I ended up recording ADR looping most of the dialogue, and I got to work with a medium scale orchestra. It was a sort of crowdfunded thing where they record in Europe, and you're Skyping in live, and you get to tell the conductor in real time to change the dynamics, or sort of you can even change the instrumentation on the fly. So that was kind of a 21st century way of scoring a film that was new and different. What I received wasn't the best. It wasn't the best recording, but I was able to kind of edit it.
And you also make did it a lot work. Of cool synth stuff, which I use a lot.
I returned the synth. I wrote a symphony, an actual old style symphony for an orchestra, which was recorded a year ago, or about a year and a half ago now. And after that, I wanted to return to my original days recording on mini disc with Virtual Instruments. That you mentioned mini disc, and I was really sold on mini disc. That would replace CDs. I had 50 cassettes worth of recordings I'd made, and then mini disc went away. Yeah. So
I have a mini disc. I worked at Sony, so music, but we would get all the equipment really dirt cheap at the time, and I have my mini disc recorder, and I could never get good live record. Not now I had the Zoom or what have you, but I could never get a good record. It would always be too hot. I didn't know how to really operate. So, but I have great. I used to get so many great stuff. I still have it in a Ziploc bag. All the equipment is just sitting in there, because as I was trying to articulate earlier, I'm trying to respect formats and not just disregard them once a so-called superior version comes along, which is what I did essentially when vinyl was, replaced, quote-unquote, replaced by the CD. I was, bought into that whole concept, tragically, So I do have, fortunately, a small but, wonderful collection, but I got rid of so much stuff because I just drank the Kool-Aid at the time. I'm holding on to my mini disc player, as trying to say, until my, enough to take it out of my, cold, whatever, my hands. And
same for visual media, because if we had a retrospective through the New School last fall, and I, we watched everything we did pretty much. So it was I started out with video, High 8, and then mini DV. And then when I went to CalArts, I got into film because I had the opportunity. So, that, but then after I got into HD, And this current one's digital, still in HD, but I'm let's go back to our first feature, or second feature we did on 60mm. And I'm I just love film. It doesn't matter about resolution or anything like that. It's so many other things that it has. So I'm hoping I can go back to that. But it's nice to have a big mix of all types of formats and looks. It's different feelings. So.
Do you have requirements, Curtis, for you're generally showing things on Blu-ray or
no? Actually, no. We actually prefer DVD just because it's easier to put together. Sometimes, I do different things. I work as a video technician, so it's
very good.
I'm able to format and do whatever I need to do. So filmmakers can be a little ornery. So you told them to send it a specific way, and they still don't send it that way.
Right.
And then so you come down to 2 days before the screening, and you're like, okay, well, let me just do what I have to do with this file and get it done. Yeah. But yeah, it's either we just screen it through laptops, or we do it through, or we just combine it on DVD. I always have a backup. That's curator 101. That's programmer 101. Have backups upon backups. So we'll have the digital files. We have the playlist. We'll have the DVD.
It's
up to me. I put on a VHS too. But hey,
sure. When short after I lost my space in Parcel, where you guys screened Glitch in the Grid, I got this. Actually, an offer to do a screening series for a beer garden / barbecue place in Crown Heights. I won't mention it right now. Well, not that there was any bad blood or anything like that, but I'll see the owner in hell. No,
whoa.
No. I'm kidding.
I have a feeling I know the place you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, they have a very successful literary screen reading series there. They invite authors, and it's huge. Mm. It's gotten a lot of buzz, and they get these turnouts. And so they wanted to try to do that with film series. So the difference is that you're asking the establishment to essentially close down. It's like to quiet things down. And it's got a bar in the room. You're asking much more. In a reading series, you could still, as long as you're quiet, you can keep the lights on, you can have the staff working, it's not disrupt. with a film, you know, I can't, you know, they would prefer me doing it with the lights up and everything, but I'm like, I've got a filmmaker there, you know, it's different, you know. There, the literary series might have a writer reading a passage that's 20 minutes, followed by a break, you know, for the next, let's say, passage that's read by whomever. With a film, you got an hour and a half, you know, I wouldn't choose long films, of course, but still. And then you have a kid, you know, so it was very, very difficult. So the reason I brought it up was because, formats aside, one day I walked in there and the projector was damaged, or the bulb was damaged. And I said, well, you know, because I put it on and turned it on, and there's like, you know, half of an image and blah, blah, blah. Looks like, you know, it's totally. And the guy said, well, you could show it like that. I'm like, I really can't because, you know, I've got the filmmaker coming and it's just, you can't do that. I just didn't know how to explain it. So I literally got in touch with somebody who I knew had a projector, like a neighborhood or two away. Had to have my whole audience, there were like 25, 30, I don't remember how many people were. It was a nice crowd. I had to go and find get this projector, set it up on a ladder. I was like, get into the audio system. It was like this is the end of my film series, I think.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I know.
It was pretty much the end.
I've definitely gone through a very similar thing.
Have you?
Yeah. Oh yes.
Yeah.
The first series I used to work on, we were in a bar. But we were on monitors, so it wasn't a projector issue. But we always had sound issues that we had to correct in the 5 minutes before we were supposed to begin.
It happens everywhere. I mean, yeah, it does. I was at Lincoln Center for New York Film Festival, and they couldn't get a DCP started for like 45 minutes.
Really?
So, yeah.
Wow.
And like Viggo Mortensen was in the room, and it was awkward.
Viggo Mortensen.
He's cool. He doesn't.
Yeah.
He actually was really cool. Yeah.
I'm sure
he was just talking to us
the
whole time.
He could do the Q&A at the beginning. You know, you figure, I had a Blu-ray or a DVD break in the middle, or, you know, just was damaged. And we, you know, I also learned for a real important thing is to play through and, you know, until we had, and then the remote control's batteries weren't working. So it's such a nightmare. And we're already in this auditorium with bad acoustics, and there's only like 10 people that showed up. So it's like, what am I doing this for? You know, but we did the Q&A in the middle. And then we played the rest of the film.
Hey.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know. These memories, I would hope they would have gone away already, you know?
Imagination, we were screening at the Sunset 5 in Los Angeles, and then like it was like a key part towards the end of the film. It just went black.
Yeah.
Remember?
We're used to it, though.
Yeah, used to it.
Happens a lot.
I mean, that's why I can't be there for the screenings. I leave.
Eric leaves. Yeah, I stay in the building just to make sure there's no problems or anything.
Yeah, right.
Even though it's tremendously awkward. But,
yeah.
Occasionally I'll like peek and feel the audience, the vibe and everything, but then I can't. Sometimes I feel like I really missed out by not being there. I mean, I'm sweating.
But you would go back in time for the...
Definitely.
There was a queue. Right,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the best thing was... Yeah, the short films. Because if one goes wrong or something, but when it's like a long play, you're like, please play all the way through.
Yeah.
No glitches. No.
No glitches in the grid.
Just
recently even, I'm not that I do my own series anymore because I really don't. But I was doing a series with the New School. Huh. And we were showing one film. And, you know, sure enough, it just started to, the sync. There was a sync problem with the audio.
Mm-hmm.
So it was off, and the woman who was kind of my liaison, she's a lovely person, but she's like, well, they can, they're okay. You know, we don't want to interrupt. I'm like, I can't do it. There's too much time left. I can't let that sync. Like, how can people focus on the film?
You can't do that.
It's better just to turn it, like, you know, we'll switch over to I think it was a DVD, and we just switched over to maybe a QuickTime or a Blu-ray version and just ask them to be patient. And sure, you know, it's a few seconds in, they get back into it, but it's just such a... I don't know how we devolved into this conversation, but it just... I'm actually grateful because it just refreshes my memory. I don't... God bless you, Curtis, John, for curating your series at the Luminal Theater.
Well, you know, like,
the Luminal Theater, by the way, exists wherever you show these films, right?
For now, yeah, until we get that permanent space.
That will be the Luminal Theater. I get it.
Yes.
But I'm just saying that is, instead of it giving it a film series name, you have a place that you're calling the location.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Absolutely. What were you going to say?
Oh, no, I was saying, I still do another series at BAM.
Mm-hmm. Talk about
cool.
that.
Okay, cool. I was going to tell another bad story, but I'll transition.
The bloodier, the better.
I'll transition from the bad stories, and the problem wasn't BAM's fault. It was actually my fault in a previous series that I used to do.
It was actually
the filmmakers. The filmmaker didn't. We told them, send us something on, HD cam or, one of the other hard tape formats. Refused. Ended up bringing a Blu-ray, even though we didn't want to play Blu-ray. And then it started skipping in the middle of the film. And mind you, this is at 10 o'clock at night. It was the last film of the night of the festival. And the audience was very patient, but it was hell.
Yeah.
I was just like cringing, and I was already tired by the end of the night. I was like, this is the last thing I want. But that all said, BAM was like, okay, we're not doing any disc formats anymore, which is the right play to do.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. But now
that was the tipping point. In other words,
I think it was. Yeah. It wasn't just us. Other people had those issues too. So it wasn't just that series. But now we do this. I do this Caribbean film series at BAM. It's called the Caribbean Film Series.
Yeah. It's a good mnemonic for the Caribbean Film Series. To call it the Caribbean.
I hope
film
so.
It's easy to remember that way.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah, keep it simple, right?
When is it?
The next one is September 7th.
Oh, it's coming right up.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it annual, or is it sounds like the next
it's quarterly?
One,
it no,
like,
it's quarterly.
It is quarterly because that's really frequent.
Cool.
Yeah, but it's less mind-numbing than a festival.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, festivals are cool. I love festivals. That's how I started. But
it's a day, one night.
It's one screening, one special screening, a couple times a year, more than a couple. Sorry, we're actually doing it five times this year.
Now you hit every season.
Oh, there we go. Right, and plus.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
they're introducing a new season this coming year. I didn't know if you knew about.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It feels that way. But
it's going to be called Trump. Yeah, anyway. Sorry.
It's in the sky turns.
That exactly, right? I was just
apocalyptic.
That's apocalypse.
Nice plug. We're showing... primarily what we do with... obviously we show Caribbean films in the series, but it's really just about making sure that these films are seen by, by Brooklyn audiences, by New York audiences, because, Brooklyn specifically, but New York especially, is, home to, the biggest Caribbean population outside of the Caribbean itself, followed by Toronto, of course. True. But, but the problem is, a lot of films don't get seen by audiences in theaters. So that's what we've done, and, even brought back some films that might have been shown a couple years ago, but weren't really seen, especially in Brooklyn, because showing a film in New York is not the same thing as showing a film in Brooklyn. Brooklyn has, obviously you could tell I'm born and raised in Brooklyn, but Brooklyn has, a special
quality.
Which answers
my first question I didn't quite ask you. But
that's right. Yeah. See, I got my plug in too.
Thank you.
But so it's different. Brooklyn audiences are different. Even though people travel from all around New York to come see our films, Brooklyn audience is totally different. Like you get a whole different vibe, get a whole different feeling, and then, people that are from the Caribbean, just come straight up to BAM in downtown Brooklyn. It's a nice central place for them to come and check out some real high-quality Caribbean films. So the one we're showing in September is called Bazo D. It's a film filmed in Trinidad during Carnival, and it's kind of like a Carnival meets Bollywood type film. It's a romantic film, really just about this couple who, like a lot of Bollywood films where this couple who aren't supposed to be together, and the woman wants to be with the new guy, with the fun guy,
right,
or the guy that's really meant for her, but she's indebted to marry this other guy, and then chaos and fun ensues.
It's kind of like Monsoon Wedding meets Black Orpheus.
That's
what I'm getting.
Yeah. I'm gonna use that.
<It's good.
laughs> That is good. We didn't come up with that one in our marketing, so I like that. Okay, funny enough, Mira Nair, she doesn't have anything to do with this film. But she executive produced the previous film we showed, which
was
this film. It was a Haitian film called Ayiti Mon Amour, by this filmmaker Getty Filin, who is actually showing it. She's Showing the film in Toronto. We did a sneak peek.
Oh.
And she's showing the film in a Toronto Film Festival.
At TIFF, right?
Yeah, TIFF, yeah, Toronto this International, year. Sorry, yes.
No, sorry.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, has the second largest Caribbean population outside of the Caribbean.
There we go. Right.
Yeah. So they should get a good turnout there, too. For
oh,
absolutely.
Or
they already did. Or no, it's going to be there next month at the...
Yeah, it's going to be there next month in TIFF.
So is it, it's one film each... each fifth of the year?
One feature and one short.
Mm-hmm.
The short we're showing is a fantastic short called Cleaning House from mm-hmm. Jamaica.
Okay.
It's I don't even want to say too much about it. It's really just kind of like this mysterious type of a film about this maid who is not exactly what she seems.
Mm-hmm. So, they never are.
Uh-huh. So it's a really cool film and fun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me not say it might not be fun and for the character she encounters, but yeah.
Oh,
but,
dear. Yeah. So that's on September 9th, you said?
7th.
7th.
Yeah, so
now,
right after
Labor Day. That's what I was going to say, because
it's
Labor Day.
It's 2 days after Labor Day in New York. So
because they're just getting over their hangover, their festival hangover, their for the Eastern Parkway.
Yeah,
the
carnival hangover.
Carnival.
Yeah.
So then, like, you know, finally maybe they can, you know... hold food down again. 2 days is gone, but 48 hours later they can come down to BAM
exactly
and start all over again.
Exactly. It's gonna be a nice little celebration. I should say I'm being a bit remiss. The Star of Basel Day is soca music, is a very mm-hmm. carnival-esque mm-hmm. Singer, Marshall Montana.
Mm-hmm.
He's the biggest soca star, soca music star in the world right now, actually. So he's making his foray into acting, and now he's going to be in this film. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Seems to be the thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like, you know, how many great musicians turn into, you know, become actors.
They definitely work at it, too, mm-hmm. yeah.
So that's on September 7th, so we'll plug that. You guys said the Columbus, Ohio screening...
It's going to be November 1st at the Wexner Center.
Oh, November 1st. Okay, so we have lots of time there.
And the Whitney show opens, I think, a few days before that.
Okay.
October 26th. Yeah.
Those are sort of big things. As far as Apocalypse is the release, that will mm-hmm. be in the spring of next year. Okay. So.
It'll be the first week of March and it's for New York.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably Los Angeles, second week of March. So there's a little...
So maybe you guys come back late winter to talk about that as
sure.
it's,
you know. Yeah, but now you got me on the Caribbean. I don't want to think about going into another winter.
I know.
I'll be hiding out at Miss Lily's over here, having a dark and stormy.
I'll be joining you. Yeah. Yes, I mean, we should have done the show from there. Now that I think about it, and then we could have been having them during.
Sounds great.
That's a recipe. Well,
for Apocalypse, winter's just fine.
Uh-huh.
It is a wintry film, I'd say.
Yeah.
It's a kind of a sober film.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to seeing it, you know, and I really am. And, I'm going to see it in a theater setting, though.
Like, yeah.
That's important, you know.
With the live audience, that's what you've been saying.
There we go. Yeah.
I want to come to, a screening, whether it's Luminal or whether it's the Caribbean film series, because it's great. This turns out to be a great conversation because there's so many different... things are going on in New York. You know, one thing I keep harping on, and we're winding down now, by the way, is that film form, I don't think, is being renovated. It needs a renovation. And as soon as the Quad reopens and as soon as the IFC Center opens its new rooms,
huge multiplex.
It's annex. It's been an annex, they're building out. And then you got the Draft House, which I think is now... Mm-hmm. Maybe in business. I don't know if it's fully
coming. Yeah.
It's already. Yeah. I haven't. I should go by there and check it out. But
it's open already.
I think it's supposed to. Well, I suppose it's not. I know they've had a couple of event screenings. I thought.
Yeah.
So
they
might be
pre-screening stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they. Okay. But regardless, the point being is that cinemas seem to be live and well as well. So, at least in New York right now, we're going into a phase of growth, and so you know, I think that bodes well for everybody at the table. Mm-hmm. Because the more people are going out, the more they're going to go out, is my thought.
Absolutely.
Maybe.
That's right,
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. So thank you, everybody. And again, and we also have the Criterion channel soon.
Yeah, it's coming in the fall. It's funny because this fall, November
2016. That's
yeah, it's coming November, and it's interesting because I got hired.
They may need a host.
That would be great. I'll try to pull some any strings I might have.
That's right.
Which aren't many, but no, it's a wonderful company, and it's interesting because I got hired when they started the Hulu channel to kind of
that deal.
Yeah, get everything on that platform, and now we're in this platform. Now all of a sudden, you got like 30 million viewers on cable watching Criterion programming. So they're definitely stepping into a larger arena.
Through
Turner and TCM, yeah.
Okay, and so it'll be for anyone who has Cablevision,
right.
Time Warner, I assume.
There's going to be a special subscription on top of the Turner network for people who want to watch, Criterion titles, and it'll definitely be worth it. I think it's unlimited with however amount they come up with. They're trying to keep it pretty low. But it's going to expose the world cinema to a lot more people.
So can I ask? So it's not going to be in Hulu anymore? They're taking all the...
Yeah, Hulu is phasing out by the end of the year. So
okay.
So
it was like
sure.
A lot of those titles were on... Wasn't Netflix? Was it
there
Netflix?
Was Mubi, and then there was Hulu, and now
Fandor has
one. Fandor
had a deal. Is that being phased out as well?
I'm not sure on that. But,
well, it seems to me that it makes sense to license a certain number of titles. I mean,
sure.
It's just more people have access to these films, and these companies, it's hard to survive. I mean, Criterion really does have or Janus, whatever, has so many these titles now. I know that, like with these as well, Robert Altman titles, for instance, it's the only format now that they're available on is the Criterion. Because, they were under some other company for...
We're definitely getting into a lot more Altman because we did McCabe and Mrs. Miller.
Right.
Now we're doing
Shortcuts. No, Nashville. I already have Shortcuts, so they're redoing it.
Oh, yeah. It looks great.
Oh, I bet. Well, I'm not buying it again. fuck you guys. fuck you.
<No. laughs> Well, that the new theater in the Lower East Side.
Metrograph.
Okay. So Metrograph, Criterion has a long-standing series. They started with Metrograph.
Really? Mm-hmm.
They started with the films of Robert Drew and Penny Baker.
Yes, I wanted to get that primary. Maybe that's the one you can. I got in just a little late because I was. And Alex will be done in just a minute. I apologize. Who's calling from Sun City Center, Florida? I don't know.
P.T. Anderson? That'd be
Sun
California.
Sun City. What I was trying to say, by now I've lost my train of thinking completely. I was in touch with Penny Baker and Chris. We did a screening of their latest documentary. That's what it was. And you came, Curtis, right?
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah.
Was that about the dog?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, about the about chimps and other animals. They were trying to legally get, this lawyer was trying to get them human rights as persons so they couldn't be experimented on and put in, used for entertainment purposes, et cetera. It was right at the same week that, Criterion was releasing this
box. Yeah, the box set.
So I wanted to get in there and promote it. I should get that. That's what I want to get.
Sure.
Anyway, so see if you could pull some strings for me. My listeners will thank you. Jeffrey, Lizer, Eric, Lizer, and Curtis, John, thank you for coming in and doing this. And thank you, Alex Brazell, for making it all happen.
Thank you.
He's the producer of Showbriz Studios, where we're recording today. And thank you for listening to this conversation. Oh, just so people can find you guys, just last thing, how do people find you guys?
You can just type in my name, Eric Lizer, and it'll give you, you'll find my film.
Into an internet.
You see my Wikipedia.
Some sort of a website or Wikipedia.
You're easy to find. There will be search results. Okay.
Yeah, hopefully positive ones.
And Jeffrey, you're also? Should people just type you into the computer?
You can just, Yeah, it's all my website's my name, but I don't want... You just go to albinofawn.com.
Albinofawn.com. F-A-W-N. Albino
right.
Fawn.
And just one thing I don't think we've mentioned that's kind of important is our films are live action and stop-motion animation.
Right.
They're hybrid films.
Yeah, they're beautiful. Gorgeous. Oh, dropped it gorgeous. I have my copy with me, in fact, of Glitch in the Grid. It was carried around just in case. And how do people look? Find you. And
regarding the Lumino, they can just go to luminotheater.org, theater with E-R, not R-E.
Mm-hmm.
And they can find me on Twitter at Media Man Kurt.
At Media Man Kurt.
Yeah. C-U-R-T. Yeah. Curtis John is not as easy to find online. There's a million of us.
Yeah. It's a typical Caribbean name.
No, it's just a typical name. I mean, yeah. Saskatchewan, you know.
Right, you know, the only
Brooklyn,
the only, you know, more
Florida.
The only more common name than Curtis John is, as you know, John Curtis.
It actually is. I mean, so. You find a million John Curtises when you look at Curtis John. So I use Curtis Caesar John professionally, so
like
people
that.
Can find me. So you can also find me if you type in Curtis Caesar John. Mm. I'm pretty much the only one.
That's great.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Miner's life is like a sailor's, board a ship to cross the wave. Every day his life's in danger, still he ventures being brave. Watch the rocks, they're falling daily. Careless miners always fail. Keep your hand upon the
dial. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. I'm off to the festival. I am at the Hamptons International Film Festival, which, by the way, I abandoned the New York Film Festival for a few days to come to the Hamptons Film Festival. I don't know why they're overlapping this year, but they are. And then next weekend, the plan is to go to the Woodstock Film Festival, which I've been doing. And we'll see how much I get accomplished. When I take my son with me, I don't always get very much accomplished as much as I plan to. But anyway, we'll be back next week with an all-new episode of the podcast. I can't really talk anymore and tell you all the episodes that are coming up, but it's getting good. We have a lot of great things in the pipeline for you. So find us on Facebook at facebook.com/filmwaxradio, or you can find us on Instagram at Filmwax Radio, or on Twitter at Filmwax Radio. Very easy. Okay, and don't forget that part about subscribing to the show. Most important of all, thank you for listening. This is, again, Filmwax Radio, part of the Showbiz Studios Podcast Network, and presented by Rooftop Films. Until next time, my name is Adam Chartoft. Take care.
I want you to want me. I need you to need me. I'd love you to love me. I'm begging you to beg me. I want you to want me. I need you to need me. I'd love you to love me. And I'm begging you to beg me. I'll shine up the old brown shoes. I'll put on a brand new shirt. I'll get home early from work if you say that you love me. Didn't I see you crying? Oh, didn't I see you crying? Feeling all alone without a friend, you know you feel like dying. Didn't I see you crying? I want you to want me. I need you to need me. I'd love you to love me. And I'm begging you to beg me. I'll shine up the old brown shoes. And I'll put on a brand new shirt. I'll get home early from work if you say that you love me. Didn't I see you crying? Oh, didn't I see you crying? Feeling all alone without a friend, you know you feel like dying. Didn't I see you crying? I want you. I want you.